Our next guest is Lieutenant Governor of the great state of North Dakota. We're going to talk a little bit about a very important bill that will be signed later today by the governor related to the use of legacy earnings. Okay, not the principal, but the earnings of the legacy fund. Lieutenant Governor Sanford, nice to have you back on our weekly Gov Talk. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I hope that we get phone calls about the legacy earnings and the legacy investments bill today, not just the previous topics, but it's something where we have had a lot of input over the last months, over the last year, on why are our legacy fund investments never here. And then there's been a lot of dialogue about, are you investing in those funds in China and Russia and with out-of-state investment managers, et cetera. And all that conversation has come together in House Bill 1425. We're having a celebration, a bill signing today with the bill sponsors, with Insurance Commissioner Gottfried, who was an integral part of the genesis of the bill and the conversations with citizens. And what it's going to do is it provides legislative intent to the State Investment Board, which I chair, by the way, to invest legacy fund dollars, which are those 30% of our oil and gas taxes received from our oil field activity, from the revenues off those wells, and it's put in the legacy fund. There's now $8 billion in that fund. And there's legislative intent to invest up to 10% of those funds within the state of North Dakota through prudent, responsible investing, right? I mean, it's something where we're not looking to do giveaways, but it'll be looking for investments where capital is needed to move ventures off the ground to a flourishing business, create more jobs, more tax revenue, more tax base for our state, and keep our economy moving forward, diversify it with new technologies, et cetera. It's exciting. It's an exciting time. We've been kind of a desert for venture capital, you might say. If you look at statistics-wise, it's hard to get that investment capital here at a state with our type of size and volume as compared if you were, you know, sitting in that Boston area around MIT, if you're in Silicon Valley or you had connections to Wall Street. So this will provide immediately, we're looking at hiring an investment manager to do a North Dakota private equity fund of $100 million to get off the ground running and move this along quickly. And we look forward to hearing from companies that are needing capital and want to expand right here in North Dakota. So it's really a positive day. It's something that I would say out of all the bills going forward through this session, this one has been the one I have been the most in tune with and paying attention to and consulting quietly back and forth with bill sponsors and encouraging, improvements to it, and really looking forward to putting these dollars to use with strong legislative intent and obviously approval from our office, as the governor will be signing it today and celebrating with those bill sponsors today. So it's really a good day. These are the kind of things we need to be talking about, getting ourselves out of this pandemic mode, moving forward, moving this economy forward with hope and utilizing the assets we have as a state. And so it's a really good day to be celebrating 1425 being passed by both houses and chambers, the Senate chamber 47-0, the House 85-8, and now signed by the governor. So it really is a good day, but it might not be so much if you're hearing of the other continuing, issues that are plaguing us during the session.
Well, and again, I just think that's a product of what people are most concerned about. And while the legacy fund does prompt some feedback on the best uses for it and some people agreeing or disagreeing or having a different vision of the original intent, this to me seems like a no-brainer, honestly, in what's kind of come together here. I know there were different variations on how to do what you're doing, but I think ultimately, obviously, the support of the legislature makes this one kind of the clear path that you're going to use. But I also understand people being frustrated after the pandemic. People are just fed up with being told what to do, and they see, by the way, I'm in Minnesota right now, and I will say this, North Dakota is better than at least 48 of the states out there. I mean, a few others. Nebraska never had a mask mandate, as an example, right? Just resisted. South Dakota didn't have a statewide mask mandate. But there were attributes of North Dakota on testing and other things that were done better than other states. But compare all of them to Minnesota, and we are light years ahead. So we need to remember that how we managed the situation was vastly better than others. Minnesota is a dumpster fire. It is just an absolute mess. I stayed in downtown Minneapolis, and you fear for your life in downtown Minneapolis at night. The Twins game today will have only 10,000 people at it, as many as they were at a Bison game, inside, and this is outside for a Twins game. So I do think yourself, the governor, and others deserve a lot of credit for how this thing was done. Was everything perfect? No. And are we a little bit spoiled? Yes. But I think when it comes to freedom, people say enough already. So, I understand the frustrations of folks. Brent, do the governor understand why people are frustrated?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm trying to focus on, listening and hearing the concerns. And basically a lot of it's going to have to work its way through. And there will be some bills that come our way that are not favorable. And then that's a decision on our part within the office of what to do at that point and weighing all the options and what the long term looks like after signing bills or not, and whether to, you know, that it's something that's a knock against hurting the governor's and the executive branch's ability to handle emergencies. We don't want to have that either. You look at what's happening with the fire response in the western part of the state. I mean, I joked to the governor and said, was legislative management asking you to be part of the decision whether to send the Blackhawks out there? And they're not. So this is something where the executive branch has a job to do, and we understand why people are frustrated after a year of COVID and the election cycle we had. But we just need to move forward. And that's what I'm trying to preach every day, Scott. There's good things on the horizon. We've got a lot of good things happening in session.
I want to learn more a little bit about the Legacy Fund, what you see as the ultimate outcome with that mechanism now available when we come back. Calls, questions, comments, too, for Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford. Welcome. Call us. 258-0550. We'll continue. Back to the question on the legacy funds. Here's a question for you by text. Why do we pay out-of-state money managers when we could pay North Dakota banks to manage the legacy fund?
Well, it depends which part of the fund you're talking about, and there is a provision in this bill to allow that and to encourage it and to basically the bill says to waive the prudent investor rule and put that out there for North Dakota banks to be able to manage some of the funds. And we've gotten it dialed in of what the banks are actually asking for. I mean, it sounds to me like it's actually managing some of the cash accounts and some of the T-bills type investments, the fixed income investments. And there's legislative intent and there's wording in the bill to move forward on that. And so we're going to have to try to come up with a program where I've been on the state investment board for 4 years and have not seen where that opportunity is as far as trying to keep the fees low. I mean, there's actually a fiscal note to increase the fees, $4 million of fees paid out to allow in-state investment managers too. And so we're going to have to work through that, of how to create some of that opportunity for our trust departments at the banks in the state. And again, there's legislative intent language in there. And I look forward to trying to figure out how to make some of those opportunities available. But by and large, what you're doing is institutional investing. You're bringing investment managers in that do this every day. The ones that we're looking at hiring to do the in-state investment program do this program for other states, and they will come in and have people that's their job, is to invest $100 million in the state of North Dakota and find new entrepreneurs, et cetera. And so that's the equity piece that I always talk about. But there's this fixed income piece there's language to do 1.5% to 2% loans for infrastructure projects with local political subdivisions. And there's also language, again, on allowing in-state investment managers, which we're determining with all the feedback from the banking associations that means the trust departments at the banks that are residing here in North Dakota to have the opportunity to invest some of those funds. So those conversations need to get fully baked and drawn out and put into policy and procedures and move forward. The one I'm talking about, the investment managing for North Dakota private equity, that's a product that we already know how to manage, that there's already investment managers that know how to do that do it responsibly in other states, neighboring states, et cetera, other like economy states like ours. And so that's moving forward. The next piece, the fixed income piece, will take more working through, and we look forward to partnering with Bank North Dakota to make sure that we're bringing in the banks that they deal with every day and the that invested in our state and have jobs in our state to have an opportunity to have their concerns heard and take a part of this. And then as well as the loaning funds from the legacy fund to local political subdivisions. That process needs a little more work too. But again, legislation is the first piece that puts the legislative intent and the law in place. And then executive branch takes that new legislation when it comes into being, whether it's July 1 or August 1, depending on what type of bill it is, and move forward. So look forward to some of those conversations and having a better public perception of what the legacy fund is doing for us as North Dakotans going into the future is the goal.
Help me understand, if this vision plays out like you see it playing out, what will be different for the taxpayers of North Dakota? How do you see this innovation fund being leveraged, if you will? Is it more jobs? Is it more companies? What's the big win in this?
Well, if you can get lower interest rate and longer term amortization for that fixed income piece for local political subdivisions, it's less debt repayment, so a lower property tax and special assessment burden on the taxpayer. So hopefully that is a result, is that the cost out of the pocket for the taxpayer becomes lower, but also that can be lower if there's more industry and more corporate taxpayers adding to the tax base, paying property taxes, paying sales tax, paying income tax, and spreading the amount that we have to all bring as individual taxpayers to a lower amount. And so building the diversity of our economy is the number one goal. And incenting those companies to stay here, whether it's a biotech company, whether it's a UAS company, whether it's some kind of ag tech company, where the entrepreneurs spin out of our hardworking North Dakotans, out of our university systems, out of our R&D research that's done at our university systems, we want them to stay home and develop those programs, products, businesses, employment, become taxpayers, become a diversifying our economy, part of our economy in the state. And that's the number one goal, is having a capital base here where those companies stay here instead of our young entrepreneurs going to Minneapolis, Chicago, New York, California, and finding those equity sources and then setting up a company somewhere else. We want them to reside here, employ North Dakotans here, provide opportunities for our kids for high-paying 21st century jobs here. So that's the ultimate goal, Scott.
Another listener wants to know about what happened with the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library as it relates to the Legacy Fund and when groundbreaking is planned.
So that one was a 2-to-1 program. It was taken out of Legacy Fund earnings from the 2017-19 biennium as far as the first tranche of money for the $50 million that would have to be matched by 2-to-1, so $100 million of private investment. The $100 million has been certified now, so the next parts of the $50 that the state's contributing are to be appropriated. And so the first $15 came in cash, and that's invested at the land board. And then the next 35 is in the form of a loan to be taken out by the governor's office, and then that amount put in with the land board to invest as well. And the repayment of the loan has to come from appropriation. Word is that half of that or so is in a bill that's remaining to be seen to start paying that loan back, so that it's a true $50 million of cash put in by the state of North Dakota to offset $100 million of private investment. And I believe the opening date is somewhere in 2024.
Always out yet.
So
all right, perfect.
Exciting project.
Yep. Always short of time, but we will continue with just a couple more minutes for Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford. And more coming up on What's On Your Mind. Back with Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford for a few more minutes. Larry, West Fargo, go for the Lieutenant Governor. You're up.
I got a question for you on, I was reading in the paper today where Montana, the governor out there, has just initiated a bill to ban sanctuary cities in their state. And I know in North Dakota now we've passed a bill in the House for transgender bill, and I'm not sure if the Senate has voted on that. But my question would be, as I was doing some research, there's 24 states in our country that are run by the Republican governorship, and they also control the legislatures. And then there's 7 more states where the Republicans control the legislatures. When it comes to issues like, let's say, the sanctuary cities, transgender bills, or voting rights, have the governors in these states ever thought of all getting together and coming up with one bill that would conform to their states and working together and uniting and passing these bills?
Those are topics. Thank you for the question. And those are topics that are discussed at RGA. That'd be the place for that to happen. And I believe you'd have to have 2/3, right? And so I don't know if there's been a time when there's been 2/3 of the states covered by one party, but there have been some movements, as Scott covered one of them, coming through our legislature for a bill to try to be proactive against a popular vote and getting rid of the Electoral College. So those kind of topics they're alive, and not only at the RGA, but the NGA, the different governor association meetings, and in the different legislative chambers as you go through the sessions of what the sessions are doing in all the different states. And so that's the venue where those conversations happen. You see quite a few bills that are coming through, and a lot of them in form of resolutions stating our displeasure for these different types of topics like you're mentioning, and the with 80% controlled by Republicans in both chambers, they're passing out as resolutions, and there are letters that end up being sent to the president, to Congress, to all the different officials on the federal level expressing the opinion of the North Dakota legislature. Resolutions don't require the signature of the governor. They come directly from the legislature, so that you might not hear as much about them. And they're not necessarily in form of law that's going to dictate something to happen, but it's putting out there our opinion for, as North Dakotans. So you'll see a lot more of those this time. There's a lot more resolutions that will be approved even today in the Senate chamber. And it's been a lot. Yeah, it's been very active. You've also seen statements by the governor against the various executive orders and the various moves that the Biden administration has been putting in place, or we're concerned about them putting in place. It's pretty active when you see an administration that's on the other side of the aisle and a lot of things that are not friendly to what North Dakotans hold dear. I mean, that's what's going to be going on for the next 4 years. The next phases will probably see litigation among attorney generals, towards these federal policies. So stay tuned. It's going to be an interesting 4 years, that's for sure.
And Larry, just so you're not, if you're not familiar, RGA is the Republican Governors Association. So as a consortium of Republican governors, what the lieutenant governor is saying is they're strategizing on a lot of those issues to come up with the best angle to take some of these things on. So they are being discussed, they are being strategized, and they're darn important for sure. Appreciate your call, Larry. Anything else?
I'd like to say one more thing.
Sure.
Wouldn't it be a stronger message if the governor associations, if they were to get together and present a strong message of all these states are going to be doing this and send that to the Biden administration?
Yes, and that's the topic for the RGA level.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to find their best way of moving forward with this administration. So thank you for your feedback. It's absolutely the place for it.
And Larry, okay, I would tell you, as Brent also mentioned, our Attorney General Wayne Stengem sent a letter this week. Basically, it's a shot across the bow to say, look, if you think a federal court is going to get by with shutting down something so integral to the oil and gas industry as DAPL, expect a fight from us and other states on this based on states' rights. I mean, the Public Service Commission in North Dakota approved the Dakota Access Pipeline route, and now for the federal government to say, no, thank you, you can't do that, shut it down until you complete an environmental impact study, is ridiculous. So I applaud the attorney general on that. I know the governor previously has brought this issue up as well and sent letters, but, you know, letters are one thing, action's another, so I'm with you 100%, Larry. Thanks for the call.
Yeah,
speaking of Dakota Access Pipeline, Brent, I know you and the governor have spent an inordinate amount of time, which really bent over backwards to build relations with the tribal nations of North Dakota, respecting their sovereignty, respecting the fact that it's government-to-government talks. Are those talks still ongoing at a time where you have one tribe in North Dakota that holds the key to shutting down the Dakota Access Pipeline in Standing Rock? Another tribe, by the way, that is saying, no, that's going to hurt us. Do you feel like you're doing enough to have these government-to-government conversations to use some of the capital you've built up with these folks?
Well, there's certainly a lot of conversation between the governor, between Senators Tolvin Kramer, Representative Armstrong, Chairman Fox. The conversation with Chairman Fache is complicated. It's one where they are on the other side of it, but that there are relationships there that are constantly being improved and worked on. And yes, the conversation is live. It's a very conflicting position for the two chairmen to be in. So that's something that Biden administration has already weighed in on, allowing MHA to have their oil and gas moratorium lifted, whereas just outside the boundary of MHA, those federal acres are still under a drilling moratorium. So Chairman Fox has had success with the Biden administration so far, and hope that his voice is heard on the DAPL situation, as we know if the administration feels that Chairman Fox is friendly to their efforts and they've already listened to his plea to keep them out of the moratorium. Hopefully that helps when the fact that the oil from MHA leaves through the DAPL pipeline, and that will have a profound effect on the finances for MHA if something were to happen to that pipeline. It's the number one reason why we don't have 50 or 60 drilling rigs, Scott. We only have between 10 and 15, and that's over concerns for takeaway of oil if something were to happen tomorrow, by the way, at the hearing with Judge Boasberg, to see what happens with the Corps of Engineers and the judge and the Biden administration. If they feel that that pipe needs to have stopped operation while they're doing their EIS, it would be very detrimental to the energy economy of the state, which then, as we talk about all the time when I'm on, half the tax revenue for the state comes through that oil and gas, the oil and gas taxation. And so that hurts all of us in the state. It's a very important issue. We're watching closely and see what actions are necessary and available and appropriate after what happens tomorrow.
800-228-0550. Last chance to get a question or comment in for Lieutenant Governor Brent Sanford was today on the program. What do you anticipate happens tomorrow? You know, we've seen from Senator Kevin Cramer's Twitter feed that it looks like the consultation with the Biden administration is worrying him that a shutdown is very possible tomorrow. Are you hearing the same thing?
I haven't heard that, but I certainly hope that there's reason to be concerned, and I certainly hope that cooler heads prevail. What a chilling message to infrastructure development and the rule of law that would be. When you think about a legally permitted pipeline that the Obama administration and the Corps of Engineers during that time authorized disoperating and moving forward under an EA, which is a lesser environmental assessment. It's not an EIS, full-blown EIS, because that had already been done on that corridor when the northern border came through, my understanding. So to think that a reversal by the Obama administration and Corps of Engineers under him would happen now after safely operating for 4 years, it sends an absolutely chilling message to private investment looking at doing pipelines or any other type of interstate infrastructure investment in the future.
Unfortunately out of time, but covered a lot of ground today and a lot more to do. Look forward to our Gov Talk every Thursday. Brent, thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate the time. Have a good day.